Well, here we are today on August the 4th, 1996, and we're at the home of Jerry Gilbraith, who came from Texas not too long ago. And his friend John Jones is here for his interview today, and we're talking with John about what was life like before square dancing for you, and how did you get into it, and give us the facts.
Well, actually, I called my first square dance, Bob, when I was in the seventh grade in a school in Brandon, Mississippi. My mother taught me how to do this call for her fourth grade class. And I remember that the call was picking up pawpaws and putting them in your pocket. And I didn't know what I was doing, but she taught me how to do it, and I did it in front of the entire school assembly. And incidentally, one of the dancers in her fourth grade at that time was Miss America of 1959, Mary Ann Mobley, who was my childhood sweetheart. But, of course, we didn't know at the time she was going to wind up being Miss America. But I did that call at that time, and my mother had a book that she had gotten somewhere that had these calls in it. In fact, after I really got involved in square dance calling, I went back and looked through her music books, and I found this book, and I took it home, and I still have it in my library as one of the things, mementos of my calling. Well, then I got a, we moved shortly after that back to Texas, and square dance just a little bit in the town, the small town that we lived in, but not very much. And then we wound up moving again down south of Fort Worth, about 35 miles. And after we had been, right after I graduated from high school and went to college for a short while, then I quit and went home, and I was in love and I got married. And I married Shirley at that time, and this was back in 1953. Well, right after we got married, the county that we lived in was having a centennial celebration, and they asked Shirley and I if we would be in an exhibition square to do a square dance demo in our little old town the night that we were going to have our celebration. And so they found a guy there that knew a little bit about square dance calling and square dancing, and he taught us some of the old-timey traditional dances of chase a rabbit, chase a squirrel was one of them that I remember. And we did a few things, and we would practice, go to various homes and practice once a week. And then it came the time for our town to have its celebration, and this guy got up and called for us to dance, and we thought we were pretty good. And, of course, we knew how to do what he had taught us to do, and then after the celebration was over with, they announced that there was going to be a street square dance. And so a caller from a neighboring town got up to call, and we got our square and got up to dance, and we couldn't dance anything he was calling because we had no idea what it was. We hadn't been taught those things that he was doing.
Were any of these callers that you're talking about, were they, are they still around or still calling at it?
No. Both of these guys have passed away. And the guy that was doing the real modern Western square dance calling became a good friend of mine after we got involved in it, because shortly after that, he came up to our little old town and taught some square dance lessons, and Shirley and I went over and took those lessons. And as he was calling, I had always enjoyed singing and enjoyed country western music, and so this was very interesting to me. And as he would call different patterns or singing calls, I would memorize them as fast as he was calling them. And so we were dancing there one night, and he looked at me and he said, "Would you like to call?" I said, "Yeah." I wasn't bashful at all about doing it. And he handed me his microphone, and I called the same thing, and he had just got through calling. I didn't really know what it was, but I called him. And then after that, well, he and his wife took us to a dance up in Fort Worth, and we had not had enough experience at dancing to know really what was going on. And the caller calling that night was Ross Carney, and I do remember that. And he called a scatter promenade the first tip, you know, and I never did see Shirley again until the dance was over with, you know. But I didn't have any idea what I was doing. And so shortly after that, we moved up to Arlington, and they were having some square dances. And the city was sponsoring some square dances, and this was in early 1955. And so we went over and started taking those lessons. And I was doing the same thing with that caller. Whatever he'd call, I'd memorize. And then one night I told him, I said, I'd like to call. And so he let me call, and I did one of the records that he had. And then he gave me, loaned me some records. And I went out to Sears Roebuck and bought a $10 record player and started practicing on that and going to different dances and learning various types of calls. And I actually started calling and trying to learn to call in September of 1955. And so I was very fortunate to have such guys to listen to as Red Warwick. And I'd go to nearly every dance he would call in our area, and then my next call or whatever would sound a lot like whatever he was doing. Because, and in those days, as you will recall, callers wouldn't tell you a whole lot. They had their own book of calls and they kept it to themselves. Mm-hmm. But if they didn't want me to use their material, well, then they best not call it a dance, because I had a book with me and I'd go write it down as soon as they called it, and I would learn it. Of course, you know, we were doing all memory work back in those days. And then not too long after that, of course, Ray Smith was in our area down there, and he kind of took me under his wing. It was one of my mentors. And I shall never forget that I was invited to come and call at a festival with Red Warwick and Nathan Hale were the two prime callers at that time at this particular festival. And Ray Smith and I were there, and along with a number of other callers. Back in those days, when you got invited to come and call at a festival, it was an honor, you know, just to get invited. And some guy was up calling, I don't remember who it was, but we had about 100 squares on the floor, I guess, and after he had called a few calls, the entire floor was broken down, and Ray looked at me and said, look at there, John, that old boy calls so good that can't nobody dance to him. And so I remembered that, and I'll never forget that. And so I have worked ever since of trying to make my calls where people could get through them and enjoy it and have a good time. And then not too long after that, I met Manning and Nita Smith. And I guess I was doing something right as far as they were concerned, because they kind of took me under their wing too. And I had them, and especially Manning, as one of my mentors as well. And as a result of getting to know them and Ray Smith, Ray invited me to come call at the Lighted Lantern, which is up in Golden, Colorado. After I had been calling for about 5 years, I was invited to come up there and be on the staff and call for a whole week. And I do remember on about the third day, I ran out of material to call, and I went to Ray and told him. I said, I've used all my material already. And he said, no, you really haven't. He said, go back and remember all the things that you have forgotten about. And so I did, and then I wound up with more material than I needed to do a whole week with. But that was an interesting experience to get started with that. And then Manning and Nita Smith and Ray Smith as well were doing lots of traveling back in those days, and they would recommend me to various people and to various areas. And that's how I got started becoming a so-called traveling caller, you know, and branching out and getting away from home. But it's been a very rewarding experience for me for the last 41 years, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
You ever had any other jobs, John?
Oh, yeah, I had a full-time job all the time. I was with the city of Arlington. In fact, I'm retired from the city of Arlington. I worked there for almost 33 years, and I retired at age 52, and I'm 60 years old now, so it's afforded me the ability to do what I want to do, and I don't depend on Square Dance calling for a living. I have a retirement income.
Yeah. And tell us all about getting started with CallerLab, then.
Well, before CallerLab ever had its first convention in 1974 in St. Louis, I knew that it was being formed. I had inside information of some people that were going, and I wanted to be in on the organizing of it or get in on the beginning, but I knew that I had to wait until I was invited to come in and that the groundwork was being laid by Bob Osgood and of course before that he and Ed Gilmore and Frank Lane got together up in Colorado and started the first meeting of it and the first organized thinking about it in the early 1960s, and then Bob started calling together his people that he had inducted into the Hall of Fame, and that's an order Hall of Fame. But I knew these meetings were taking place. But as I said a moment ago, I knew I had to wait until I was invited to come in, and then when the first convention was decided to be held in St. Louis in 1974, well, then I did receive an invitation, and I was very pleased that it was signed by both Lee Helsel and Bruce Johnson to invite me to come, and went to that convention and thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think it was one of the greatest things that's ever happened to Square Dancing, to get all of us callers together from everywhere, and you got to put names with faces, you know. In fact, your face, your name developed a face, and certainly your brother Al and all of the other callers that I had heard of for so long and hadn't been able to meet. Then as a result of CallerLab, I did get to meet them. And then, of course, the Board of Governors was established with 25 members on it, and I thought, well, heck, I'd like to be a member of that. And so I waited until time came about. I didn't run for the Board of Governors when they had the first election for it because I thought there were other more deserving people that could contribute to the organization more than I. And so I waited until the second year when it came open for people to apply or petition to get elected to the board. And then I decided I wanted to do that and had some good help. Jack Lazary helped me and Jim Mayo and several others as well circulating my petition to run for the board. And I did get elected in 1976 to the Board of Governors, and I wound up serving 13 years on the board, a total. I did drop off at one time, stayed off for a couple of years, and then went back and served another term. Shortly after I got elected to the Board of Governors, then I was elected to the Executive Committee and served on it for a couple of years. And then 1 year, Bob Van Antwerp was chairman of the nominating committee and called me and asked me if I would consider being chairman of the board. Well, I didn't think I was good enough to do that. And I first turned him down. Well, he called two or three more times and finally talked me into doing it. And I did, and that was in 1979. And then I wound up serving 2 years as chairman of the board. So it was a very rewarding experience, a great experience, and of course I'm still very active in CallerLab and will probably continue to be as long as I'm a Square Dance caller, because I do believe in the organization and I think we're headed in the right direction. We've made some mistakes in the past, but I think we're smart enough to figure out what to do, and we're in the process of doing that now, I think.
Well, that's great. You've made some recordings.
Yes.
Want to tell us a little bit
about
who and when?
Well, I guess, I was looking the other day at the first record that I made. The name of it was Wings of an Angel, and it was recorded on the Square L label, which Melton Luttrell owned at the time. Still does own the label, but it's inactive and has been for a long time. And He was the first guy to ever use a different color record, and we had red vinyl. They were real pretty with a blue label on it. And the name of the tune, the original name of the tune, was The Prisoner's Song. Well, I changed it to Wings of an Angel, and which is one of the lines of the song, and that was the first recording that I made. And I was listening to it the other day, and it had a daisy chain on it, which of course has been dropped. That's been put in the glossary now. But we wrote some pretty good choreography back in those days for singing calls that we don't have today. Some of us are trying to do some better choreography today than what we've had of the same old routine. But that was the first recording that I made. And I really don't know how many records. I made several records for Melton on the Squirrel label. And then he kind of quit recording or didn't record for quite some time. And C.O. Guest and Billy Lewis in our area had bought the Kalox label from a guy that had originally started it, and C.O. asked me to record with him, and so I did, and I made a number of records with him. I think the first one I recorded with him was Good Hearted Woman, but I can't remember exactly for sure. Made several records for him, and then Norman Murbaugh, who owned the Blue Star label down in Houston, he asked me to record for him, and I did. And I was under contract in those days, and we still don't, and I still have never been under contract to record and don't want to be. And so I made two or three records with Blue Star. And in fact, my son Vernon is also a Squirnax caller and has been for about 17 years. And he's been around Squirnaxing all of his life. That's all he's ever known as far as recreation. But he took it up, and he's a very good caller. Has two clubs at home that he calls for. And he had done several recordings with Blue Star, and then he and I did one together. We've had the first father-son recording for a long, long time, until Wade Driver recorded his dad. And then, but we were quite proud of that. We got two of those. And in fact, we may do some more before too long. He and I really enjoy calling together. And then there's a new label that has started, and I still record with Kalox, who has now been bought by Fred Bean up in Portland, Oregon. And I just did a record for him with Al Stevens from Germany. We did one together. And but there's a new label that started up in Dallas called Global Music Productions. And they have asked me to do some recording with them, and I just did one. I've got one coming out right now, and the tune is Adios Au Revoir, Peter Zane. It's a brand new record out there. So I really don't know how many I've done, Bob. I haven't counted them.
You're going to take that to Germany with you?
Yes, and that was one of the reasons that we did it, because he knew I was going overseas, and we thought, boy, this will really work good over there.
Have you, what about hobbies? Do you have any spare time to play golf or anything like that?
Well, I played golf for a little while, but I'm not an avid golfer. I've only played twice in the last 10 years, you know. I just didn't really get involved in that. But my mother is still alive, and she owns 265 acres down south of Fort Worth. And in fact, Shirley and I have been divorced since 1986. But we're very good friends, and we get along great. And she and I and my son, Vernon, we have half of my mother's place leased, and we have some cattle on it that we piddle with. And then I also buy and sell antiques, and I have a space rented in an antique mall where I do that. And that keeps me occupied when I'm at home. But it's just a hobby.
Well, you can't be at home very often. You're always out there.
You know, being retired from my regular job has afforded me a lot more travel time, and I don't have to be back at work, and I can schedule my time to do what I want to do, and it's been really good to be able to do that. I quit calling in 1986. In January of 1986, I decided after 30 years that was long enough, so I quit. And I didn't want to stay in the activity until I got ran out. I've seen callers do that, and I didn't want to be that way. So I thought, well, 30 years is enough to dedicate to the activity. So I retired from calling, and I stayed out for 18 months. And then I was invited to participate in the National Convention in Houston in 1987, which was in June, and I thought, well, while I'm down there, I may as well call a little bit. So I signed up to call. And then they asked me to call with a live band they had there. And of course, I enjoyed doing that. Back in my early days of calling, as you well know, we all used live music because we didn't have any records.
Right.
And I thoroughly enjoyed calling with bands. And so I enjoyed going down there and calling with the Ghost Riders band out of California. And then I thought, well, if I can get back into the activity and do what I want to do and not do those things that I don't want to do, then I might enjoy it for a while. And so I've enjoyed it doing what I'm doing. I don't have any regular clubs anymore because I did that for 30 years. I had as many as three clubs. And I just want to do guest calling. But I do help teach a class in Fort Worth. We have a co-op type class going there at Swing Time Center in Fort Worth, and I fill in and help do that as much as I can as they need somebody. So I'm still involved in teaching, and I think that's where that's the backbone of our activity has got to be.
Right.
If we're not teaching new dancers all the time, well, then we don't have anybody to fill the vacancies that we have in our activity.
I heard you talking, for the sake of the tape, John gave a very interesting seminar at the Central District Callers Club today, and after that I heard you talking to somebody else about some trips you've got coming up. You mentioned three or four different countries, I think.
Yeah, right now my schedule is pretty heavy for the next 3 months. On August the 12th, I leave to go to England, and I'll be there for 6 days calling dances in the London and up in the March England with Pete Skiffins is the caller over there that has set this up for me, and I'll go up and call with Malcolm Davis and several of the other callers that are around in the London area. And then I fly on over. My destination is Salzburg, Austria, where I'm going over to do a festival that's in connection with the Mozart celebration that they have over there. And after I finish that, then I go up into the Netherlands and call, and then the summer roundup of the European Square Dancers Association, the European Callers Association, is in Cologne, Germany, and so I'm going to attend that as a visitor and just as a dancer. And then I call seven other dances in different towns throughout Germany. And then I leave there and be back home for a week, and I've got a couple of local dances in Texas. Then I go to Australia for 2 weeks, and I've got a weekend festival in Brisbane, Australia, and I've got another one in Sydney. And then I leave there and go over to New Zealand for 2 weeks. I've got a weekend festival in Christchurch and one in Wellington. And if they get my visa paper together, as soon as I get back home, I'll be home for a week, and I'm supposed to go to Saudi Arabia for about 10 days. So it's quite a hectic schedule coming up here real soon.
Have you had any experience with non-English speaking groups?
Oh, yes. And the first one that I had was in Japan. I was invited to come over to Japan to call their summer jamboree along with the caller Mike Letson. And that was my first experience with non-English speaking people. My first dance to call was in Osaka, Japan. And we went all the way across from Tokyo. Shirley was with me on that trip. And got to the dance in the early evening and went into the hall, and the entire group were all females. And I thought, oh, boy. And as a sight caller, you know, that really made it difficult for me. So I had to revert back to my memory, and I had to really do some thinking. And it was really interesting to call to those ladies. But just about the time I had them figured out as who was dancing with whom, they would change partners and switch sides. They could dance either side. Didn't make any difference. They all had on beautiful costumes. And they would come to the dance. They were all housewives, and they normally danced in the afternoon, but this was a special dance for them. and they rode bicycles and mopeds and this type of thing. You get to the dance, they'd bring their sports clothes, change in the building, and then after it's over with, they'd change clothes again and leave. And so I asked them why they didn't tell me that it was an all-female club to start with, and they said they were afraid that I would decline to call for them. They really wanted me to come over and call. But it was a very interesting experience. One of the local callers there, Michel Osawa, who's a very good caller in Japan, he and three of his friends were a little bit late getting to the dance because from work. And so four men came in, and they had four ladies, and they danced in front of me the rest of the evening, so it made everything okay. Yeah, and to digress just a minute, back to the sight calling situation, you know, it was rather interesting that in 1957 and 58, we went and attended 2 week-long sessions that Les Gocher had up in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, for dancers. And I knew that that man was doing something different from what I had learned to call. And so I sat down and talked to him one day and asked him if he would explain to me what he was doing, and he described sight calling to me there in Arkansas. And when he showed me what sight calling was all about, it made it so very, very easy for me to learn how to do that. I wasn't smart enough at the time. I learned it a little bit too much, and I overdid it to a certain extent, because I thought it was really a great tool, and it has been. But yet, it has caused callers to not be as creative as they should be. Because of it, we get lazy a little bit with sight calling, I think. But Les Gocher taught me how to do that back in 1957, and I've been a sight caller ever since. And of course, I know that you're aware of the fact that Les passed away about 2 months ago. But he was a controversial individual, but yet he was still a good friend of mine.
They say a sight caller's worst nightmare is 8 nuns.
Just what?
8 nuns.
8 nuns, yeah. Would be. And of course, you know, all the Japanese people are all about the same size, and they all have black hair, and you know, it's very difficult to distinguish between the two of them. But also during that same weekend, when we went over to near Mount Fuji to do this week-long institute, and we called all the way from basic through A1. At the time, I was calling advanced. I don't do that anymore. But at that time I was, and all of these people that would dance the so-called higher levels, all of the advanced dancers were in dancing with the basic dancers, and all of the mainstream dancers were there. Every dancer was in dancing with the basic dancers, and I told them later that I thought they had a really good system, and they said they kept it that way, that if you dance one of the other programs, you must go back and be a part of the other programs, because that's the only way to keep their activity again. I think they have better control of it than anywhere else in the world that I'm aware of. But that weekend, we had 3 American military dancers on the floor. And I would say something funny in English, and they would be the only 3 people that would laugh. The entire floor of about 25 or 30 squares of Japanese dancers was just stand and look at you like they hadn't, and of course they didn't. They didn't understand what we were saying, but they understood the square dance call. But you had to call them exactly like they're written in the book. And I found out when I had the heads do a dive through, and I said, "Heads, turn around," and the entire floor stopped and did not move. And it finally dawned on me that I was saying the wrong word, and I said, "Heads, do a U-turn back," and then they did exactly what they were supposed to do. But they didn't understand anything other than the call exactly as it's written. But since then, I've called in Germany. One experience that I had the first time I called in Germany was at the European Festival in Munich, and they asked me if I would do a workshop session, and so I did about 30 minutes, and I got up and was teaching some call. I don't recall exactly what it was, but we probably had 100 squares or so on the floor that afternoon. And while I was teaching, the entire floor was talking, and they weren't paying any attention to me, I thought. And so it was rather irritating. You know, we like for our dancers to listen to us, and they weren't listening to me. And so when I finished with that session, I went to the chairman of the festival, and I said, I must be doing something wrong because I couldn't get those people to listen to me. And I explained to him what was going on. Well, then he apologized to me for not telling me in the very beginning that every single square on the floor had an interpreter in it. And everything I was saying in English, they were interpreting it in German as fast as I was saying it. They could dance what I was calling, but I thought they were not paying attention. And so that was an experience that I had to get used to. So it's going to be going over there again. I've been back into Germany since that first time, and I've learned to understand the situation a little bit better. Of course, more of them speak English now than used to. So you can say a certain number of English words and get by with it, but not very much. You have to call the call exactly like they're written.
Getting back to your mother just for a minute, it reminds me, do you know if was yours a musical family?
Yes. My mother played piano. My father didn't. He couldn't sing at all. He could whistle a little bit, but he never would attempt singing. My oldest brother was a musician. He played clarinet and saxophone. And my brother, just older than I am, was a musician. In fact, he has a master's degree in music. But they were more into popular music and also symphony-type music. And I was the rebel in the bunch. I like country, western, hillbilly music, we call it, you know. And I played drums. I don't read music. Never did learn to read music, but I knew rhythm. And learning to play drums gave me a great experience in rhythm, which has been a big help in my square dance calling. But I always enjoyed singing. And when I was a young child, and my mother and my brother tell me this, that I was really tone deaf, that I couldn't sing worth a flip. And so my mother and my brother taught me how to sing. Still today, I can hit a bad note, and I know I've done it, but there's not anything I can do about it.
Have you ever gotten involved in contra dancing or round dancing?
I've done some contra dancing, and I've talked and called some contra dancing, but not nearly as much as I probably should have, because I've stayed more involved in the square end of it. But I do enjoy contras, and I've done a lot of contra dancing with Bob Osgood and Don Armstrong, you know, and of course I think Don Armstrong is probably one of the very best in the business as far as doing contras, and I thoroughly enjoyed dancing to him. But I have done lots of rounds, in fact taught rounds for a long time, and I don't anymore, but I still do as many rounds as I can, and I enjoy all the aspects of it. I just don't do as much of it as I used to.
Well, you really don't have the time to.
No, I don't have that much time to dedicate to it. It would take up all of my time if I were doing everything.
Right. Well, John, this has been a very interesting conversation, and I wonder if you just let me put you on the spot for a second. Would you give us a kind of an overview of how you consider the activity today and where you think it might be going?
Well, our activity today is on a decline, and it has been for several years. And I predicted over 10 years ago that when the advanced and challenge callers began to suffer for people to come into their activity, then they would start a campaign to get more people into the activity because they would begin to lose them. Most of the advanced and challenge callers are most of our more well-known callers today in the program system that we have that was developed by CallerNow. I think the program system was necessary to do because we had such a haphazard situation going on all across the country,
right,
and there was no control on it. And so developing the program system put the control that we were looking for, but it also created a situation where people are more interested today in dancing a program rather than having fun and fellowship and or dancing to a caller. And I said this the other day, that I can remember in 1965 when the National Convention was in Dallas, that Marshall Flippo was the most popular caller at the time, and probably the most popular caller we have ever had in the whole world. And people would follow him from hall to hall just to dance to him. Whereas this past national convention in San Antonio, and Marshall was there, but there were people that never heard him call because they stayed in a particular hall to dance a program rather than to go dance to a particular caller. And that has been a rude awakening for a lot of people, that all at once we realize that that's what's taking place. If people are dancing programs and not wanting, they're not as concerned about having fun and fellowship. I have said for a long time that we've got to put the three F's back into square dancing. That's fun, fellowship, and family. And once we do that and we concentrate on that, then we'll begin to build our activity again. It was very interesting at the Caller Lab convention this year, there was a debate between Jerry Story and I about this very situation, in that he has proposed that we put more emphasis on basic and mainstream and take everything else, all the calls that we don't keep in mainstream and the plus calls, and put them all into advanced to make that step from mainstream dancing to the next step to be such a broad step that more people will want to stay in and have more fun in mainstream and basic. And my position in the debate was to defend the Caller Lab programs, which I think I successfully did. However, I reserved the right to give my own personal viewpoint before that debate was over with, and that was that, in my opinion, to build our square dance program back to what we need to do, that we need to take the very best of our square dance calls that we can teach in no more than 20 weeks and eliminate everything else until we build our program back. Now, I don't know that that will ever happen, but that's my own personal viewpoint.
Well, that's an interesting thought. I talked with Cal Campbell, and his philosophy is the savior for square dancing is to start at the student level, at the university level. He said we're not developing new leaders the way we should.
We don't have any new young leaders, not like we used to have. And I mentioned to Tony Oxendine, the most recent past chairman of the Board of Governors, a few years ago, and I told him I could remember when he and Jerry Story and Larry Letson and Craig Rowe and a number of other callers around the country were really pushing us older guys because they were new and young and good, and we had to work to stay up with them or to stay ahead of them or even be close to them. And I asked him to name the callers that were pushing him. And his first name was Tim Mariner, and then he couldn't name anybody else. He said, there is nobody else. And I said, yeah, that's right. And that's one of the problems that we face today. All of our newer square dance callers coming into the activity today are either 50 years or older. Whereas back in my day, when newer callers came in, I was 19 when I first really got started. And then I got started at age 20, was really got me involved in the activity, and I was young. And, of course, today that's young. And we don't have that situation going on. Well, everybody keeps saying that we've got to have newer dancers. We've got to have younger dancers. Well, we're not going to get any younger dancers until we get some younger callers. And because callers attract their own age group. And that has been proven over the years. And so to get some younger callers, we got to teach some younger dancers. And nobody has any teen clubs anymore. And we don't have a teen program. We're trying to build one again in Texas. And in the North Texas area, we're trying to build one. Very difficult to do because nobody's willing to spend the time to work with teens anymore like we used to. We used to have a lot of them, and that's where these young callers came from. I had a university program going at the University of Texas at Arlington for 13 years. It was a full one-hour PE credit course that I was teaching there, and finally got it developed through one of the PE professors there on campus that belonged to my square dance club. And I was the only non-degree professor that the University of Texas at Arlington had for a long time. But they accepted the fact that I was an accredited caller from Caller Lab. and as I became an accredited color coach. And after I got both of those accreditations, then they accepted my credentials as being approved to teach there in the university. And there have been six or seven callers come out of that group. But we don't have that type of activity going as much as we need to, and that's where we're going to have to go.
Well, it's certainly been a very interesting conversation, John. I appreciate you taking the time. And we appreciate Jerry Gilroy for providing the facility for us to do this and using his electricity, at least.
Well, thank you very much. I must add that the Caller Lab presented me with the Milestone Award back in 1985, which is the highest award that Caller Lab gives. And right. I'm extremely proud of that.
Yeah, I meant to mention that. Thanks for mentioning it. So we'll see you again, John, around the square.
Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it.
You bet. Now, in reviewing this tape, I suddenly realized that we did not mention to you that we are in Albuquerque today, New Mexico, and that John Jones is from Texas. Also, I detect a sizzling noise in the background of the tape, and that was Mary Beth Gilbraith's preparation for a delicious fried chicken dinner, and we enjoyed that as well. Tonight, John is calling at the Albuquerque Square Dance Club's hall, and I plan to go, and I think it would be nice if I just added a few, at least a couple, of his square dance calls live at the hall tonight. Well, we're here at the Albuquerque Square Dance Hall, and John and Jerry are having a terrific dance. I guess the two of them are going to kind of swap the mic all evening long, what they did on the first tip. And you can hear them coming now. We've got about 12, 14 squares on the floor.
And the corner to circle the loop like an old choo-choo, circle the feet around the go. Reverse back, single file, lady and the lady go by the mile. Girls, step out and take a back track. When you meet your partner, box the net. Do a wrong way, right on the ground, around the track. When you meet your partner, wrong way, promenade, but don't stop, don't slow down. Everybody keep going the wrong way around, and they keep on moving, bound to go. Hit the boat's wheel around. Do a round if two with the two, found and down. Slide through, then pass through, but out and out, left out and bound it. Walk in and around and grand, a grand move out and out, do a round to go. Hand over hand, and meet your dog, promenade to go round the hall. Back corner, down the goon, then heads, do a round lift through. Past the ocean deck, everybody extend. Recycle, sweep on water. Pass third, do a wheel and deal. Double pass third, put centers in, but dance forward and back. Bend the line, stay with the same sex now. Pass third. And then you wheel and deal, and all the girls are in the middle. And the girls touch a quarter. And the girls circulate. Chain down the line. Go to a man, girls. Please. And then around it through, and cross you go, and when you get done, you gotta pass through and bend the line and move up to the middle and back. Now pass through, and then you wheel and deal. Do a double pass through. Put centers in, but dance forward and back. And you bend the line. And then you pass third. And then you wheel and deal, and all the girls are in the middle. Girls touch a quarter. And the girls circulate. Chain down the line. Go to a man, girls. Please, you got to chain first before you go. And then you pass third. You bend the line. And then do a round if through. Across you go. then flutter wheel, cause I want you to then sweep on water more, now veer left and then bend the line. Now pass through and you wheel and deal in the center to pass through an alley metal, left alley man, here we go, better on alley grand, grand Friday to ride the bourbon, in and out of the meet your girl and promenade like a riding girl, and all we do around you know, and then all four of these chain across. Keep jawing hands, circle south, get a little moonshine in your mouth, circle the dollar, better line to go. Ladies, center bend, sashay. You circle to the left, go around the sink. Now, the ladies, center bend, sashay. You circle to the left, go around the bend. Then do an ollie by the left, do an ollie by the bar. You go far into you, and you make a star. And into the middle of the back of star. And you back along and provide where you are. Shoot the star. Do a run out of grand. And on the third hand, promenade. But don't stop, don't slow down. Everybody keep moving. Found the rings, just keep on going. Side couples, wheel around. Pass through. Bend the line. Pass the ocean. And the ladies tree. Swing through. Girls circulate. And the boy tree. Then the boy runs with a run around a girl. And now tag the line all the way through. Face into the middle, each touch a quarter. Single file circulated, boy run around a girl. Then I'm gonna lift through in the middle of the pin and then pass through. Swing through you do. Girl circulate and the boy tree. And the boy run to the run around a girl and now couple circulate. And then bend the line, do a run lift through across you go and now. Pass through and bend the line. Do a run lift through one more time and then you pass through and bend the line. Pass through and you wheel and deal and the center's wheel full around the face to suit behind you. Left out in man, up and about a left, better man, a left, grand, grand, right, and up, around the goo, hand over hand, I'm sure, darling, promenade to go around the hall, if it could have been, I did it up, down, and now bow to your partner, and then bow to the corner of the hall, and give yourself a hand, gang, that's about all, yeah, all right. Circle left. Well, I went down to the Fort Bend County auction. I saw something I just had to have. Walk out around your corner, then you see some of your own. Do the last alley man and weave the line. And I said, hey, pretty baby, won't you give me a sign? I'd give you anything to make it mine, oh, mine. Swing your girl around and you pollinate. I ain't ever seen anything looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's one of a kind. Going once, going twice, I'm sold. Head to Swirly Fork. Go around the floor now. Don't touch, no saloon. Get around it, girl. Swing to, boy, run. Do a Ferris wheel across that world. Center to, pass through, touch a quarter. Scoot back and down, swing the corner girl and you promenade. I ain't ever seen anything looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's one of a kind. Go it once, go it twice, I'm sold. Hit couples promenade halfway. You go round now. In the middle, do run out if you turn them to. You flutter wheel across, sweep one quarter more. Pass through, do a dosado, you know. Come on and now swing through. Then the boy treat, swing the corner girl and you promenade. I ain't ever seen anything looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's one of a kind. Going once, going twice, I'm so circle X. Well, the auctioneer was going about a mile a minute. He was taking bids and calling them out aloud. Walk out around your corner, then you seesaw your own and do a left alley mad and weave the line. $25, be there now, $30, 30, we think you need 30, make it 30, bidder for me, $30, swing your girl around and you promenade. Will a $30 bidder now, $35, will you give me $35, make it $35, bid you $35, who bid me that $35 bid? Side swirling and go. Four hands you know now. Don't touch, do salute, get her out of girl. Swing the boy rock. Feel Ferris wheel across that world. Centers pass third, touch corner. Scoot back and down. Swing the corner, girl, any pile of nay. 45 bid, circle after. Well, I went down to the Fort Bend County auction. I saw something I just had to have. Walk out around your corner, then you seesaw your own and do a left alley man and weave the line. And I said, hey, pretty baby, won't you give me a sign? I'd give you anything to make it my own mind. I'll do your bid and I'll be at your back and call. I ain't ever seen anything looking so fine. Man, I gotta have her, she's one of a kind. I'm going once, going twice, I'm sold. Well, you got a bow to the partner in the corner of the hall. I wanna hear you make some noise. Come on, y'all.